I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. Yesterday, the Chicago Defender, one of the most important Black publications in U.S. history, ended its print run. And starting today, it will only publish its content online. This marks a significant change for one of the most historic papers in the United States. For over 100 years, the Chicago Defender told the untold stories of Chicago's Black community. But this transition to digital only is a sharp turn for much of the paper's audience and an especially sad transition for people who relied on physical copies of the paper. Joining us to discuss all this is Richard Prince, a columnist for Journalisms on diversity issues in the news business. Welcome to The Takeaway, Richard.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And also joining us to discuss is Shea Taiafemohajer, professor of the University of Southern California and a media criticism writer for the Columbia Journalism Review. Welcome to the show, Shea.
Thanks so much for having me.
Richard, let's start a bit with the historical context of The Defender. Tell us about its backstory. Why did the paper form initially, and what was its importance in the community?
Well, its importance is, they're a towering example of the power of the Black press in the 20th century, particularly in the earlier part of the 20th century. It was largely responsible for the great migration of African Americans from the South to the North. In that era, Blacks were still being oppressed, and they were getting really tired of it. And the Chicago Defender, Robert Abbott, the publisher and editor, said, "Come on up to Chicago. We have jobs here. You don't have to take that." And they listened. And the white power structure in the South tried to keep Blacks down there, but they were not successful. Some stayed, of course, but Chicago became a mecca. And for that alone, it earned a spot in history. But there was more, of course, as with the rest of the Black press. There was still a lot of Jim Crow and discrimination to be fought. And over both World Wars, World Wars I and II, they inaugurated what they call the Double V campaign, which was victory at home and victory abroad, meaning we must fight racism in the United States, but also in the armed forces itself. And as a result of some of that, there were people in the federal government who were investigating these Black papers for sedition, thinking that that was tantamount to treason in some cases. So the Black press and the Chicago Defender played a major role in keeping African Americans' eyes on the prize. They would cover issues of concern to the Black community that were not being covered in the segregated white press, and continues to this day, although a major change took place with the civil rights movement and integration and the beginning of the white press and white media to hire African Americans, which sort of sapped the brain trust of the Black press.
Shea, I want to make sure we get in. When you heard that the Defender was going digital only, how common is that particularly for ethnic press today?
I think ethnic press really struggles in a lot of ways. One being legitimacy. They're often disrespected and told they're advocates simply because they focus on a community so strongly that they are deemed to be one-sided rather than, given the props that they are deeply service-oriented to communities that have been neglected by American journalism.
Shea, I want to get back to what we were just talking about in the last segment here. When you look at how digital media is sort of taking over, we've seen this happen across media in general, but specifically for Black press and ethnic press, what are some of the main challenges when they shift to digital only?
I think digital only is a different conversation. It's a younger conversation, and it can be very heated and demand a lot of time. A breaking news focus is often what is needed when you're covering news in a digital space. You can't be late to it. And unfortunately, I think there's, folks who often produce ethnic media in addition to doing other jobs. Not at the Defender, but in many places, you'll find that, these are very, very small mom and pop shops that are, doing something out of the goodness of their hearts. And that isn't always putting them in a position to compete on big stories or to produce journalism that's a little deeper.
Richard, I want to also take a step back. We've, in addition to the Chicago Defender, we've seen Johnson Publishing, the historical publishing house of magazines like Ebony and Jet Magazine. When we look at the state of Black media in the United States, what's your sense of where it is today? Is there room to be concerned for the future of Black media in the country?
Well, I think Black media has the platforms have shifted. When you say Black media these days, you're not really just talking about Black newspapers. You're talking about the digital space. You're talking about television. You're talking about radio. And those platforms are thriving. BET is huge. Whenever they put on an award show, it just goes to the top of the ratings. That's Black media as well. We still have Black radio stations. And as I said, the Black digital space with websites such as The Root and The Griot and HuffPost, Black Voices, are all attuned to breaking news and are places where people tune in to find out what's the latest thing that's going on. And we can't, of course, forget Black Twitter and social media, which also has become a part of Black media. So the Black newspaper media have sort of fallen behind and therefore are really an older or staid audience, I guess. So when you talk about Black media, you're really talking about social media and the digital space and television and radio.
I'd love to get both of your thoughts on how what's happening behind the scenes at a lot of these organizations is also shifting. When we think about newspapers, it used to be, ad revenue is what drove most of that, whether it was a small local press or even the New York Times. That revenue model has obviously shifted. And we're also seeing a decrease in the number of media companies that own. Who owns what is really a big conversation. I think we've seen less people of color, less Black Americans owning media. So I'm curious whether you see that affecting Black and ethnic media more broadly, Shea and or Richard.
I mean, I see that there's always a struggle in media in terms of, revenue. But I do see, as Richard notes, the success of some sites to really adapt to social media. I think the big story of social media is that there's always been an audience. Movements like Black Lives Matter, Me Too, Close the Camps, these are all in their own way indictments on the coverage plans of journalists across this country who weren't covering Black people dying, who weren't covering sexual assault and all these stories in the ways that we're finding out there now. So in terms of revenue, I think that is the never-ending struggle. Content and choices and coverage are where I think we're seeing a real shift in digital, and people are finding success where they were told those aren't even stories.
And this has come up, Richard, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, but this has come up a lot, particularly with Latino-owned media here in New York. When we think about the one of the longest-serving publications, El Diario, has had changes in its ownership. And we see shifts in the type of content that El Diario is producing, from less substantive content especially. So does that have an impact also? Who owns the media, Richard?
Yes, it does have an impact. In fact, I wrote a piece a few years ago about this very question of who owns what, and I think that the response I got from editors of the publications that are not owned by people of color is, look, as long as they leave me alone to do what I need to do and give me the resources, I'm fine. And that seems to be the approach. Univision, of course, is the biggest Hispanic-oriented television network, and that's not Latino-owned.
And it's up for sale. Or it's talking about being up for sale, so we'll see. Yeah,
exactly. And Telemundo, of course, is owned by NBC. But I don't hear the grumbling that they're not doing what they should be doing, because apparently the people who are in charge of the content are allowed pretty much to do what they think is best. And as long as you bring in those dollars, whoever owns it is happy.
Shea, you live you're based in Los Angeles. Give us a sense of, are there local outlets speaking directly to communities of color there? Are there smaller ethnic publications that are thriving out on the West Coast?
We do have some independent media out here that's doing a great job. I shout out LA Taco every chance I get. I think they're doing some exceptional work. But I mean, a lot of the work that I've done recently in Los Angeles looks at the newspapers we lost. The Chicago Defender, in that same era, we had the Liberator out here in Los Angeles, and it disappeared for many, many years and was only recently unearthed and is at the California African American Museum now as a sort of historical display. But we look back and we also see what we've lost. There have been newspapers that have come and gone. KSCI was a channel out here that only had broadcast for pay-for-play, where international groups would go and host Armenian language or Cantonese or Farsi language television shows for immigrant communities. And we lost that last year. So a lot of these smaller publications that serve immigrants and that serve communities that are, you know, rather large here in Los Angeles struggle to stay open, stay up.
Shea Taiafimo-Hajer is a professor at the University of Southern California and a media criticism writer for the Columbia Journalism Review. And Richard Prince is a columnist for Journalisms focusing on diversity issues in the news business. Shea and Richard, thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.